We are going to speak on some examples of what typical approval-seeking behavior looks like. So, number one, changing a position or altering what you believe because someone shows signs of disapproval. Did you get that? Changing a position or altering what you believe because someone shows signs of disapproval. Next one. Sugarcoating a statement to avoid the reaction of displeasure.
Say that one more time, please.
Sugarcoating a statement to avoid the reaction of displeasure.
I don't ever do that.
Three. Apple polishing in order to make someone like you. Four. Feeling. Huh? What is apple polishing? What is apple polishing?
That's when you bring an apple to the teacher so the teacher sees you as
brown
favorable.
Brown
nosing.
Brown nosing.
Oh. That's my first time. I never heard that phrase.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Being a suck up, Judy says. Feeling depressed or anxious when someone disagrees with you. Feeling insulted or put down when someone states a contrary sentiment to your own. Labeling someone a snob or stuck up, which is just another way of saying, pay more attention to me.
Or they don't agree with me.
Or they don't agree with me, yeah. Being excessively agreeable and head nodding.
Oh, yeah.
Even when you don't agree with all that is being said. But you want to look good, so you're not in your head.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. I see. Mm-hmm. Performing chores for someone and feeling a resentment about not being able to say no. That is self-defeating. I get into it sometimes. At work, sometimes you have to do things that you must do.
Well, did you want to hear what
Ernestine
said?
What did she say?
That's why we're not married.
I don't want to be. I think I do.
Hey. No, there are some really good chores that you can perform without saying that. Being intimidated by a sharp salesperson and buying something you don't want to buy. Or fearing taking it back because he won't like you. Eating a steak in a restaurant. Is that you? Eating a steak in a restaurant that is not cooked the way you ordered it because the waiter won't like you if you send it back.
Or might do something to it.
Oh my God.
Please don't spit on it. Then they'll probably do something else, but you just don't want to spit on it, right?
No.
Your
thought.
Saying things you don't mean just to avoid being disliked. Spreading bad news about deaths, divorce, muggings, and the like. And enjoy the feeling of being noticed. That is approval seeking. Getting permission to speak or to make a purchase or to do anything from a significant other in your life because you fear the displeasure of that person. And I'll just read one more. Apologizing for yourself at every turn. The excessive I'm sorry that they are designed to have others forgive you and approve of you all the time. Trying to impress others with your knowledge of something that you know nothing about by faking it. Being unhappy about someone you respect, having a contrary point of view and expressing it to you. And the last one I wanted to mention before we go into meditation is, now all this good approval-seeking behavior feels good.
Yeah,
it does, because we are in a good place. We get in our pats daily, or if we don't get our pats, we go to a corner and wait for another pat to come out of the corner, or whatever it is, you know. And so we are feeling good. But Wayne Dyer is saying there are dividends for all this good stuff. And guess what these dividends are? Placing responsibility for your feelings on others. Because you're placing responsibility for your feelings. Let's read the first panel. A look at the why of this self-defeating behavior will be useful in coming up with your strategies for eliminating approval-seeking needs. Below are some of the more common reasons, mostly neurotic in nature, for hanging on to approval-seeking. Payoffs for approval-seeking as a need would include placing the responsibility for your feelings on others. If you feel the way you do, lousy, hurt, depressed, etc., because someone else didn't approve of you, then they, not you, are responsible for how you feel. Mm-hmm. Next thing is, if they are responsible for how you feel because of withholding their approval, they can change in you. Then any change in you is also impossible, since it is their fault that you feel the way you do. Then they are also responsible for keeping you from being different. Thus, approval seeking helps you to avoid changing. Mm-hmm. As long as they are responsible and you can't change and you don't have to take any risk, okay, as long as they are responsible and you can't change, then you don't have to take any risk. Consequently, hanging on to approval seeking as a way of life will help you to conveniently avoid any risk-taking activities in your life. Reinforcing a poor self-image and therefore encouraging self-pity and do-nothingness. That's one of the dividends. And so if you are immune from the need for approval, you are immune from self-pity when you don't get it. Reinforcing the idea that others must take care of you, and therefore you can revert to the child in you and be cuddled, protected, and manipulated. And then last one, blaming others for what you are feeling, thereby creating a scapegoating effect for everything else you don't do or take care of in your life. Mm-hmm. And there are a few others, but you know, you kind of get an idea that this is the payoff for getting stuck, staying stuck in an approval-seeking behavior, approval-seeking relationship, because you just get the good nod. You know, you're addicted to the good feelings all the time, and sometimes it takes a lot of strength and a lot of perseverance and a lot of hurting through the experience to come out and have that change, to come out and stand strong in your power. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and do a meditation. Back to the book.
You want the right
book? No. No, thank you. So as we consider in the stillness of our mind, and in this quiet, I find my authentic self. I listen to my inner flawless self, the one I have covered over with my doubts, fears, excuses, guilt, and blame. So I need to commit myself to live in the present, not from the programming of my past. I can allow my authentic self to emerge from behind the wall which I have erected between my awareness and the joy, beauty, creativity, and fulfillment of my true nature. So we become still and comfortable. Take a few deep breaths and relax. You may need to do some writing after, so just be prepared if you are inclined to do so. Just let everything else just float away from your mind, from what we've spoken about, and just be present. Think of right here, right now. Visualize a sense or sense a wall directly in front of you. See or feel the wall in as much detail as possible. What is it made of? How high is it? How wide is this wall? Is it very long? How long is it? What color or colors is it? Does this wall have a texture? In your mind's eyes, put your hand on the wall. How does it feel? This is the wall that has held you back from truly rejoicing in your life. Behind this wall is your authentic self, free, unlimited, joyful, without doubts, fearless. Now you're going to dismantle this wall, piece by piece. As you take it apart, examine each piece carefully. Feel it, touch it, smell it, taste it if you want. Notice what you are experiencing as you do this. The wall is now completely down, and you are with your inner self. What is it that you see? What is it that you feel? What does it look like? Look around you. There is an object nearby with a message on it. Pick up the object and read the message. What does the message say? Now become aware of your breathing again. Become aware of where you're sitting. Become aware of the floor beneath your feet. If you want, you can stretch, you can stand up. Just to know that you're back in this room, this experience with us. And we have a moment to share if you would like to do that. The question is, did you think everyone would get the same message? Or what was your message? So you can share what the message and the object seemed like, if everyone or anyone is willing to do so.
Wow.
You don't have to. I don't know. She, you had your hand up or something?
I thought I saw her do my thing.
Oh.
Oh, no.
No.
Okay. Sorry. You can stand. Okay.
Yeah. I saw myself in a white box. It was a room, and all the walls and the floor were white. And I looked at the walls. And then when you said, tear down the wall, I had an axe first,
and I put a hole in the well, and then I had a chainsaw, and I cut a big arched door in the wall, and it flopped out, and it went, it was a box, and it was in the universe, it was all stars, the doorway, and so when it fall down, it was like a drawbridge into eternity, a doorway into eternity, and the only objects nearby were stars, and the message was, I am that I am, you are what I am.
Whoa. This may be a good opportunity to remember your blue paper to come up with that wonderful, powerful message to yourself. That overwhelming kudos to you. Thank you.
It was a white, rough surface brick wall. I remember feeling it, and on the ground was a rock that I picked up, and it just said, "Choose not to need. Choose not to need. All is well."
Anyone?
How did you get to the other side? How did you get past the wall?
It just, I imagine being in both places at the same time.
Uh-huh.
The wall didn't really come down, but all of a sudden I'm on the other side of it.
Uh-huh.
When I got the message, just choose not to need, and independence.
Okay.
Thank you, David. Anyone else wants to share?
Very interesting. My wall was very tall, very white, and cold. And as soon as I started tearing it down, I just took one block, fall down, and I was into the presence. Wow. Full blast, full light. Full wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And it really struck me that sometimes we forget if we build the wall, but that's not the truth. The truth is that we are the presence. That was my main thing. It was like the presence was there and it sucks you. You disappear into that presence. That's pretty funny. Anytime you don't have a will in you, this is the truth.
Thank you. Yeah.
My mom was people, like their arms were intertwined,
Range Rover,
feeling the bodies and all. And I didn't tear down the wall, but I, moved hand, feet, and arms and legs. And when I got in, I saw myself. And I guess I was all different ethnic groups. And my message was, I am you, and you are me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I was very confused. After I got past the wall, and then there was bright light in me, and the inner me was surrounded me, and I said, why is the inner me on the outside? Don't get
outside,
it.
Outside, inside, and everywhere.
That's right. It was everywhere.
Thank you.
That reminds me of something. Can I say it just quick? I had a friend who was in practitioner training, and he said, God is within me, and it keeps getting smaller. And I said, but the whole point to affirmative prayer, the five-step prayer, is the first step is God is. And you draw God as big as you can possibly imagine. So that when you, in step two, you say, and I am that, you expand rather than God contract.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a difference in the perspective.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Connie.
Sorry, Lorraine.
Oh, I was going to say, my wall, it was only 3 feet high. I don't know why, but it's 3 feet high. And it was really strong wall, like like very strong. Like I didn't think I was going to be able to knock it down. And when you said to start tearing the wall down, it was like I barely have to do anything and the wall came down.
Wow.
And so the message that was on the other side was stop walking around fearing everything and focus on the power that I have.
Mm-hmm. Power is in you, within you. Is that what it is? You have the power.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lorianne.
My law was, I kind of read the thing beforehand, so I had already kind of done it beforehand. I did kind of get more information as that when you walked us through it, but right away when I read it, the wall was a brick wall, it was so tall I couldn't see the top of it, and to each side it was so long I couldn't see the end of it. And you know, I just removed the first brick and the wall came down. And on the other side of the wall was me. But it was me when I was a little girl. The first message I got before you went, it says, I love you. That was the message I got. And then when you took us through it, I got, welcome. Mm. Welcome back. More like a welcome back.
I did get a welcome message also. Mm-hmm. I got welcome to you, welcome to me.
Welcome to your authentic self.
Yeah, mine was just welcome to me, welcome.
And of course it was pasture and lilies and beautiful colors on the other side.
You got that?
Mm-hmm. That was in the field of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I invite you to just let go of anything that stands in your way this morning. Anything that may cause you to be preoccupied with something else rather than being right here, right now. Just breathe in and let it go with breathing out. And so I give thanks, knowing that God is all there is. God is everywhere present. God is the eternal energy that moves through us and moves through everything. God is the glue behind it all. God is the energy and the power. God is the wisdom. God is the knowledge and the understanding. God is the reason for our choices. God is just absolutely 100% always available. Everywhere, everywhere present. And so as I know that God is all there is, I know that God is in me right now. God is as me. Right now. And God is moving and loving and being kind and being gracious through me right now. And so as I know this for me, I know this for each person here. Right here, right now, they are an absolute emanation of what God is in their own unique way. In their own characterization, in their own attitudes and own wisdoms and knowledge and whatever they are, God is. And so that gladdens my heart, knowing that there are no inferior or superior. We are all one, right here, right now. We are in the heart and space that God is. And so as I give thanks, I let go, knowing that today goes smoothly. That our talk, our interaction, our conversations, our coffee break, everything about today just goes 100% with ease and with a sweet fullness. I know that each person here today literally gets what they want to receive. They accept the things that feel good and meaningful to their lives, and they can put on hold or just let go the things that doesn't serve them. And so I'm so grateful for this, the act of choice, the act of choosing. I let my word go into the law, knowing that it is already done. And so it is.
So it is.
Hi, good morning. Welcome. So, because we are starting pretty late, I'm going to kind of fast forward in a real quick way. So I'm asking each person to share. If you want, you can review from your last couple of weeks the experiences of what Phil shared with you all, or even going back to the beginning of our self-esteem class. And if you can just choose something, you know, pretty short today while we're doing the introductions, something that impacted you, something that has caused you to change your life because you're looking at yourself, self-esteem, in a different way. Or you can simply just introduce or reintroduce yourself to us, and we can move on. So who wants to start first?
You go first.
Or I could go from any direction. Okay, I'll go first. My name is Gail Renwick, and I'm a practitioner and a friend and a member and everything else for with the Sterling Study Group, and I'm doing the presentation facilitation today. And I am really learning to look at myself in wonderful ways, knowing that there is absolutely a letting go process for me. I have recognized that I cannot do it all, and so I'm beginning to put things into segments in my life, and that feels very good for me. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know which way. You want to go, Erin? Mm-hmm. You want to go? Okay. We can come back. We can come back to you. Would you like to go, Valerie?
Okay. Valerie, I'm happy.
Anything you
want to say.
Okay. This week, I had a thought that I enjoyed. It was, God is the heartbeat, we are the pulse.
Ooh.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's me. Cool. I'm Connie Chandler, and I'm the director of Sterling Study Group, and for whatever that means, and I'm a practitioner. And I was reading Ernest Holmes this morning, and he was talking about the individualization of the divine as each person. And he said, the individuality of each one does not divide the infinite, it multiplies it. We are the multiplication of the infinite. I thought that was a really powerful thought. Mm-hmm. It increased my self-esteem when I thought about
that.
Okay. Well, self-esteem means confidence and ease and peace from within. It means that you get a feeling of that you're enough. That's all. You're just fine, just mm-hmm. as you are, and really all is well. Nothing to be insecure about. And so it's coming from the heart, and that's where I come from. I had an excellent day yesterday. It was one of those landmark days, and I got to connect with Phil on the phone and the new way. And just, you know, I appreciate this family. This is a good family. I welcome my new faces, Susan, and I didn't get your name yet, but I will.
Janice.
I welcome you, and this is a great group, and we'd like you both to feel very welcome. We're 5 years in the making and strong. And good. That's where I am.
Thank you,
David. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Well, Dito, what you said, David Gordon. Well, welcome you. And my name is Pita Rosero, and I'm a practitioner also. I'm very proud to be I hear something very interesting yesterday. Larry King interviewed Deepak Chopra, and he's talking about, a book he wrote about Buddha, and but the highlight was that it's interesting how these things are going into the media now. It's everything is bubbling, but I always say that God is cooking something, so I can see the bubbling right now. But the thing is, to me, one of the most difficult concepts to accept is that we are divine, that God lives in us, and we are part of the divine. Especially if you are Roman Catholic, that's a no-no, that's a sin, that's a sin of pride. That's why the angels fell down, because they thought they were the slain of God. So, it has been a struggle for me to really, really, really believe that. But in case, for analytical people, I felt it in my heart that this is the truth. This is the truth of who I am. And in my heart is telling me, forget about what you know here, or what you know in your past and everything, what I feel is the truth. Mm-hmm. And I feel it here. It's so amazing. But this Chopra did something very interesting for me yesterday. He says, God is the thought behind your thought. Mm-hmm. And he's only one. Mm-hmm. There's only one. So if you have a thought, that comes from God. That's what the source, the energy comes from. And it really hit me. I said, it's a confirmation. He's an Indian guy living exactly in the opposite part of the world, and he got it. Mm-hmm. We have to believe it. Hello.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. I'm Judy Oliver and Lakuta and Gail and Connie. I'm a religious science practitioner, and let me see. I had an interesting discussion with a friend of mine from. We've known each other off and on professionally for 15 to 20 years, and we were talking about what I'm doing now, and he said, what happened to the person you were, that used to be really I was very different 20 years ago, and I'd like to be part of that person again, but I also know it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all there if I choose it. The energy, the enthusiasm, the fire, it's all there.
I'm Kate Hannigan, and I'm not a practitioner. And this week I had a really marvelous experience using the principles of science of mind, where the doctors at Georgetown said, there's something wrong with your liver, and it's either this bad thing or this bad thing. And I was like, what if it's neither bad thing?
Amen.
I want to believe that it's neither bad thing. And so I got in touch with Judy and Connie and put it out on the email list, because we have an email list for this group, and I said, everybody treat that there's no big deal, that there's really nothing wrong. So it took them a really long time to give me the results of the test. They did the test on Wednesday and they didn't get the results until Monday. But rather than getting all geared up to get bad news, I just got in the vibe of, it's no big deal. They are wrong, and they're going to say it's no big deal, and because I don't feel bad, and I really don't want another episode of having to worry about my health, so let's just go with no big deal. So finally on Monday, they called and they said, never mind. Not this bad thing or that bad thing. We can't explain it, but but it's just a little blip, and there's no intervention required. So it was really good to be able to know that I can use the power of the mind and the power of thought and prayer, and it works for me in my life. And I'm really grateful for everyone to believed in the wholeness of me when I get a little scared, because mm-hmm. the doctors, they like to be right. Mm-hmm.
What they didn't know is that there was a bigger liver in the liver.
Just for the benefit, Kate had a liver and a kidney transplant, both at the same time in February, and that was just the second kidney transplant in her life.
So it's been about 15 months since I had my transplant.
Came very close to death.
I'm sure.
And she is a gorgeous
scar.
Blessed. Yeah. How long were you waiting for that? Like 2 years?
Yes, at least 2 years, yeah.
Thank you. Phil.
I'm Phil Crosser. And I have one painted toenail.
We call that party toe.
It's a party toe.
Yes. I want one now.
Is it semi-box or?
It probably is related to the boxes we loaded last week.
Oh, yeah.
Finding a resting place there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like with our the transitions that we're going through, it seems like one miracle after another. They took off with the pod, which is an 8x8x16 big container that we loaded up, and it's on its way to Huntsville. But we're still a year and a few months away from going to Huntsville. But by the time we get down there, everything we own will be there. Mm-hmm. And we got all moved into the apartment, and it's just one miracle after another. Another neighbor came by and says, "Wow, you sold that house in a week." He said, "That was a miracle." And I says, "Yeah, it was."
It was.
Thanks, Ben.
Well, I'm Grace Crocker, and I don't have any painted toenails either. And I'm tired from all this moving stuff, but. As far as self, I like me. I like everybody here. I love, you know, the last talk about not anybody. What was it, high self-esteem or low self-esteem? Just liking who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I like me.
I'm Susan Gershon. I've been looking for something, and I've heard very good things, and thought I'd come and see what you're all about. And glad to be here. Thank you,
Susan.
Y'all know me already. I'm new to this group. I've been here since about, I guess, late in March. And I've really been blessed from being here. And this is my friend Janice. I kind of told some of you about her. She introduced me to religious science, and she lives near Atlanta.
Yeah, Janice.
I respect you every time.
Yes, my name is Janice Griffin, and I've been a student of religious science for about 7 years.
Okay.
Wow. I am fascinated, as you say, about how the difference, the new thought is permeating the media and throughout the world. I feel that it's long overdue, probably like most of you do, and I'm so overjoyed that the word is getting out there, and I credit people like Oprah and Dr. Beckwith and Deepak Chopra that have the courage to be different, to say something different, and stand by what they feel. I have had some struggles since I've been here. I'm here for 1 year, it's similar to a training program, has to do with work, and it's been such a struggle because the energy here for me was very different from what I'm used to. I'm from Georgia. I was introduced to Science of Mind when I lived in Orlando, Florida, so the environment is much different from the metro D.C. area. Mm-hmm. But, of course, everything that you experience in life is for a reason, for you to learn from it. So I'm thinking my lesson is that I should come to understand that I can live and flourish anywhere on this earth, in the universe. So I'm getting there, and Ernestine is going to help for me. She's She's a mirror for me. She lets me know some of the things I need to work on. And so I'm glad to be here. I love this teaching. Mm-hmm. It's something I was looking for my entire life. So I'm glad to have it.
Thanks, Janice.
I'm Lori Ann. I'm her daughter. That's all.
I heard you sing like a bird. You're a singer. Uh-huh.
She's a beautiful singer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Miss Erin, if you would like to.
I am happy and I'm 12 years old and this is my mom. And yesterday I learned a very important lesson. Don't ride 8-year-old scooters.
Oh.
I've had a scooter for 8 years and I was riding too fast and the wheel turns whenever it wants to. So it turned and I ran into my friend's ankle and skid 2 feet. Oh. Now I got scarred a lot of places.
Could have been much worse. Stay off of them.
Mm-hmm. We're glad that you're okay.
Yeah. And the self-esteem part was that afterwards she's in pain, she's in great pain, she said, I'm not going to let it hurt.
Oh,
I am good. Not going to let it hurt
right after that.
And then it doesn't hurt.
Whoa.
Well done.
Yeah.
Wow.
And what's your favorite animal?
What's
your favorite animal?
I don't have one.
She needs you to pick one. Anyone. It doesn't matter what it is. Pick an animal.
Of course.
Thank you. You'll keep her busy for a while.
Okay, thank you guys for sharing. If you look in front of you, there is, I think, Erin.
Oh, everybody didn't get one yet.
No, it's a good
one. All right. Pass it down. What I would like you to do on that, and you don't have to do it right away, but during the course of the day, because we would declare in a very, very positive and affirmative way today who we really are. So I want you to choose a statement, a phrase, or a word that really very dynamically says who you are in a very affirming way. You know, you would talk about actresses and actors, and I mean, you would have such wonderful things to say about them. Put yourself in that same light, magnified, multiplied by many times, and write something very powerful about you. So you can think about that while we go ahead with our class today, and hopefully something comes up in some way.
It
could be one word, could be a phrase, could be a sentence, could be a paragraph, whatever you want to put there. If you need more paper, we have lots of them. Erin chose blue, and I don't know if she had asked or if everyone chose blue, so you have many colors to choose from. All right, I had a reading pulled out, but we are just going to know that the reading that I was going to ask David to do is actually what we have on our An Affirmative Life by Stephen R. Covey. It's 4-1, Self-Esteem, Week 4.
Okay.
4-1. And it says, where does an intrinsic security come from? It doesn't come from what other people think of us or how they treat us.
Lorianne doesn't have a book she can look on with.
I know she likes to keep herself occupied, so she's like Erin. Okay. Thank you, Connie. It doesn't come from the scripts they have handed to us. It doesn't come from our circumstances or position. And we're going to continue with this statement after we've kind of come across a few things. I have to declare right here and now that my good friend Wayne Dyer. Wayne Dyer. I had this book since between 1982-83. And he has helped me tremendously on my journey, my self-esteem journey. And guess what? There are instances where I still get into that sort of low aspect, like my toenail and all that good stuff. But I have really asked Wayne to really draw onto me the things that I need to really focus on again. As I had mentioned at one point in time, you know, just lay before me the moments of my high resolve, which Thurgood Marshall, was it? Mm-hmm. Lay good before me the moments of my high resolve. And there were many, many, many moments when I decided that I am going to change my life. I don't like how I am. I don't like how I respond to others. I don't like the getting and the approval behaviors that I had. And I wanted to change it. And Wayne truly helped me. So you would find that I would be quoting a lot from him and maybe even reading some passages from his book. I refuse to buy another one. I think I have a holding on issue too. It's Your Erroneous Zones by Wayne Dyer. So let's just get into what we need to talk about. So where does insecurity come from? One of the things it's this passage says, it does not come from what other people think of us. Let's talk a little bit about what people think of us. How much time do we really spend getting approval from other people?
Too much.
Exactly. Do we find that we want approval, or we need approval, or that approval is just a good thing as we go by?
It depends on the person.
And this is a real choice people make, and it's a very, very individual issue. And so there are things that after the break we need to write, and you can write some of the things that, you know, you would like to confront and to let go of. Okay, so approval seeking is not a desire, you know, it is not a necessity. Yes, we would want it. Who doesn't want our shoulders to be stroked and our mental, sort of emotional capacity to say, to hear the words, well done, you did a good job. All these are wonderful things. You love applause, you've done a great rendition, and you know, people love to give praises. And, it's just almost human to really say, did I do it right? And a lot of the times you would hear yes, and some of the times you would hear no, and some of the times you would hear, what an idiot, or whatever. And then, guess what? Guess what? You literally start pulling from what you're hearing. And this is where it's come from. It came from way back when. You know, I thought I had perfect parents and perfect upbringings, quote quote, but obviously not, because I was screaming inside, and for whatever reason had to manifest this book in my experience, which absolutely helped me. So it's okay to really love applause, and it's okay to be mentally stroked, but being dependent on it literally puts us in a different sort of category. Being dependent on it would make other people's opinions a whole lot better than ours. It's absolutely giving up our self-worth to the other person. It's allowing the other person to really rob and stretch and manipulate us in ways that, even if we want to say no, just because we are reaching out for approval, we just want to be there and to become smaller and to shrink as the manipulators apparently get bigger and stronger in their yeses or their noes or their maybes. So we want to make sure that as we define what approval seeking is for us, that we can categorize it. Yes, I need your approval, and yes, I can stand on my own with my own approval. There is a fine line which we can explore a little bit as time permits. Okay, needing approval is giving up a big chunk of ourselves to the other person whose agreement we must have. You know, Wayne Dyer refers to this as wearing your emotions, or, well, it's not emotions in this case, but it's wearing your approval-seeking behavior right on your sleeve so that other people can rub it and pull it and push it the way they want you to push it. So, and this is a choice. This is a choice we've made, although we are not thinking that it is a choice, but intrinsically it's coming, it is unconsciously, I should say, it is a choice, because I've allowed myself to become like almost a puppet for another person. So Wayne says, you wear your self-worth on your sleeve for someone to rob or not rob as they see fit. You feel good inside only if they decide to administer some praise to you. So could you imagine what your sleeves would look like? If someone is in a real pity party and they want to give you some approval at that point in time, you probably have some snotty nose stuff in it. It would have some tears in it. It would have whatever it comes from, you know. People who want their strong opinions and want to push those opinions over on you would really want to hold on to your sleeves and sort almost tear it apart. And so our sleeves are our absolute protection. We want to make sure that that our sleeves are not, yes, they are out here, but they're not out here for other people to constantly be manipulating. We want to make sure that they're here for, because we're just an absolute presence of God, and we are out here with everyone else. But whatever our approval is, whatever our emotions is, whatever we have, absolutely comes from inside. So I learned that a long time ago, and I'm still learning it. I'm still learning that I can't wear my sleeves for emotional stuff. You know, I sometimes do need that extra support from someone else, and, you know, I would hug, I would cry, but that doesn't mean that I am asking for approval from someone. I am opening up my heart, my soul, and just being me, releasing tension from inside that I want to release, and not another person literally manipulating. So I have to be careful about emotions. I have to be careful about my feelings. You know, if a person doesn't say, well done, how do I feel? You know, what does my sleeve look like? You know, that sort of thing. So I always remember that statement, and it's 23 years and I've never really forgotten it. Sometimes I do. And when I do, I pray and I really seek, you know, I'm in the process of seeking more and more help for people who would remember my, that I am a divine child of God. And whatever experiences are out there are just out there, according to Tyra Banks. Tyra Banks, I love her. She's the next Oprah coming up. Keep your eyes on Tyra Banks. She has some really neat shows every once in a while that she says, so what? Yeah. So, you know, so if this didn't work out for you, and whatever the issue is, or if you've put on 10 pounds and you've been behind schedule or whatever it is, she said, so what? Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful way of remembering not to have people manipulate you, not to have the media manipulate you, not to have whoever manipulate you. Mm-hmm. Have it come from inside. So what? That's a really neat way to do it. So the need for approval, Wayne Dyer says, comes from almost a single assumption. Don't trust yourself. Check it out with someone else first.
Mm-hmm. And always do
Don't trust yourself. Check it out with someone. Mm-hmm. And this is the second part of our reading, which says it doesn't come from how other people treat us. Right? Our intrinsic security does not come from how other people treat us. But first, let's talk about this. First of all, this first, the person or the people who are bestowing this approval can be absolutely great manipulators. Could we think of anyone who manipulates our lives here? No finger pointing. You'll have a copycat person following you too, so you can. Yeah. But we do have people manipulating us, even if we don't think they are. Just the fact that we become stagnant and immobilized and not able to move or not able to follow through with what our decision is or was, is in a way someone is manipulating us. Someone is pulling our strings, pulling our tails, sort of. So keep that in mind.
How much of that is our doing?
All of it is our doing. Okay. And we get to that. Yeah.
Don't tell
her. Yeah. So therefore, stepping away from the great manipulator in the direction of self-approval and independence of your own opinions are considered selfish, uncaring, inconsiderate, and you can come up with tons of names when you don't follow through and follow your own decision, follow your own heart. You hear a lot of name calling that, hey, because I'm doing what I want to do, then you really need to think about where you are and what you do, or you really have to think about how selfish you've become or whatever. Mm-hmm. And these are things that keep us down, because we absolutely are seeking approval when we can't move on with decisions like that. And so we have approval coming from the school system. The school system is designed for, my gosh, for just we just depend on them for every approval seeking behavior that, in some ways, I'm sure we look back in our past, read this, write this, erase that and do it this way, you know. You get an A because my thoughts align with your thoughts, and this is exactly how I want to do it, and you get an A for that. Very good. You got good praise. But the moment you have a child that is different and thinks differently, although they come up with the same answer, but it's not the way the teacher wants the presentation or the school system wants the presentation, then it's wrong. It's, you know, so now you have to kind of beat yourself in for 5, 6, 7, 8 years of school, or sometimes more. And that has an impact. It has years of impact, and your body remembers. And so this is one of the things that we think about. The other thing is, what about institutions like churches, synagogues, leaders, you know? We've come down with all these non-approving behavior. You know, do this or else, or you cannot do that. You do that, you're disbarred. You do that, you become a non-entity in our congregation. You know, and there are so many things that I could go back and think about. In my mother's little church, it was my church too, because I was part of it. But there were so many things looking back that really, you know, it just was not a point of choice. You couldn't think for yourself. Everything had to be. You know, lined out for you. And the minute you cross that, then you become an outcast. And being an outcast is one of the worst things you can ever go through, especially in a church that someone says and talks about loving and being loved, you know. So this is one of the things that also causes low self-esteem. And then what about songwriters? We have gone to, I've grown up in an era where they have so many different songs. Let me give you some idea of some songs. You are nobody till somebody cares. Does anyone know that song?
No.
Nobody till somebody loves you.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. It all depends on you.
Everybody plays the fool. I know that.
You make me feel brand new.
Mm-hmm. It's all without outside of it.
As long as he needs me.
Without you, I am nothing.
Without you, I am nothing. You are the sunshine of my life.
Yeah.
People who need people.
Yeah.
Yeah. See? I mean, we have grooved to songs like those.
Right.
You know? They're nice songs. They put you in a really nice place. But just listen to it. You know? You truly become dependent on another. You are allowing another person to say, well, if I'm not wrong, then poor me, I'm sorry. I can't do it alone. It's all about you, and it's not about me. And so this is one of the ways that that songwriters and the media and everything else really affects us in a negative way. So if we had to rewrite these songs, how would "You Are the Sunshine of My Life" come out, sung to you?
I am the sunshine of my life.
I am the sunshine of my life. What about people who need people? This came from Wayne Dyer. The first one was
what is the loneliest number?
One is the loneliest number. That is another one, you know? One is the loneliest number. Who can love us more than we can love ourselves?
That's true.
You know? We are allowing and giving permission for other people to say, you love me, and show me that you love me, so I can feel good.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, that is very self-defeating.
Mm-hmm.
And so we truly have to look at it in lights like that. So, I can't live if living is without you. How would we say that? You make me feel like a natural woman. Okay. Do you know what I thought?
Just not right.
I don't know. I mean, I could
have. That can happen.
I don't want to deflect you. I just don't know what that means.
What?
Oh, how do I
think she was trying to express the fact that she was in love.
Can't live if living is without
you. Give me that love and feel
that natural. Can't live if living is without you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unnatural.
Primal.
Yeah.
That's
it. Primal. Yeah. Okay, so this is some of the. Wayne Dyer went ahead and rewrite some of these songs. And he said, I make myself feel like a natural woman. It has nothing to do with you. What is a natural woman? What's a natural woman?
Okay.
Okay. So I make myself feel like that. No man or woman can make me feel something outside myself. Okay. I choose to love you. I must have wanted to do it then, but now I've changed my mind. Choices, right? people.
I don't think those were catchy.
No, I know exactly, and that is what sells. Guess what sells? Self-defeating behavior sells, because a lot of people would be like, yes, I don't have to, I could blame the song from the way I feel. Yes, it's always the other. And so if you don't take it and be responsible for what you're hearing and turn it into a very positive I statement, then you are, they're rubbing your sleeves. Mm-hmm. They're putting their snotty nose on your sleeves. All right? So here is another one. People who need people are the unluckiest people in the world. Mm-hmm. But people who want love and enjoy people are making themselves happy. Mm-hmm. Another one is, I make myself so very happy because of the things I tell myself about you. And I am the sunshine of my life, and having you in it makes it even brighter.
That's right.
Yeah. Cool, huh? Mm-hmm. And I can, C-A-N, stop loving you, but at this point, I choose not to. So these are some of the things that we have to be very careful about, because these are the scripts we hear from way back when that tells us we need their approval, that tells us, hey, you know, this is who you are because I say that's how you are, you know. Okay, so it doesn't come from our circumstances or positions. We don't want to kind of bemoan this too much, but you may not like what you do from day to day. You know, each task is different. The task may not be done the same way every day, and it may not be done the same way to the level of your expectations. So what? So what? You know, give yourself a break. Don't be hard on yourself. Don't beat up yourself because the project wasn't done on time or whatever it is, you know. Stop equating your performance with your self-worth. So without this knowledge, you'll always be confusing yourself with your external activities. You'll always be wanting to say, well, you know, what does this person think? What does that person think? What happens then, or what happens here? And then there will always be a swirl of confusion. And so knowing and being strong about our own self-worth truly helps us to stand up and be ourselves, be self-approving. All right? So, and you must know this for yourself, that you are worth something, regardless of your achievement or non-achievement. Very good. So we come to the point where we are going to go ahead and do a meditation. And this meditation, let me make sure that, because I think I wanted to do the meditation after. Okay, before we go on break, we'll go on break soon. But before we go on break, I just want to give you this typical story. I think we'll do the meditation after because it will just flow into the other session of it. Okay. So we've spoken our mind, we've done something and it's really sweet, and you know, we've been getting approval consistently. And this approval could come from anyone. You could put in / whoever you want to put in. So, you know, you've done a good job. And so my mother, my wife, my husband, my daughter loves me. And I feel good. I feel good because I'm loved. I feel good because she loves me. So that's one scenario. And that could continue for a long time. Just because I've been doing good stuff and I've been getting good feedback, good praises. But at this point now, I've spoken my mind and I'm a little different from what my mom or my sister or my brother, my husband, my wife, whoever it is, you know, I've spoken from my heart and I did the best that I could have done. Then guess what? We are hearing well, my wife does not love me, or my mother does not love me, my sister doesn't love me. And of course, I feel bad. I feel bad because / does not love me. I am bad because I feel bad. See how it's going? I feel bad because I am bad. I am bad because / does not love me. And she does not love me because ultimately I am bad. And so that is the story that keeps going, that the script that has been written for us over and over and over again. You know, children hear this consistently, that you're bad, you go over there, go to that corner, do whatever it is to get out of my face, because right now I do not love you. That's what they hear. They hear it in their minds. The parent may not say it, but they hear it in their subconscious. And more and more and more, they hear it multiplied during the day, during the years, and during the formative years, and guess what? It sticks. It stays there. And so at some point, yes, they believe it. And they know now there is good because I get praises. And then there is obviously bad because I get sent to the corner, or I think what I'm doing doesn't line up with what my mom likes, and that makes me bad. And, you know, this is where we need to kind of break the chains, because I wish I had known that a lot earlier. I think I did a good job. I'm seeking approval here. But, you know, I did the best with what I could have done with what I knew. And I really absolved myself from it, because I gave the best that I can. You know, I had my parents, and here we go with the blaming stuff. I had my parents to pull this information from. I saw how they disciplined. I saw what happened when I did things a certain way, and what happened when I did things a certain way. You know, and so one of the things I would really like, if anyone here besides Valerie have and me have kids in the room, is something from Khalil Gibran or Gibran?
Gibran.
And he said something so beautiful about children. He said, "Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you." So we'll take a break. Thank you so much. And we'll be more interactive in the second part.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yay.